Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome into another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jonathan Mayo, coming to you from USA's Baseball's National Training Complex in Cary, North Carolina, where I am on hand to cover the National High School Invitational, a terrific high school team tournament that has a lot of really good players. It's the 11th one. I'm always excited to be here, and joining me is Jim Callis, who is maybe not as an exciting location, but that's okay.
I like my house. I like my house.
Your house is great.
You know what's crazy? What's crazy, Jonathan, is this is the, I believe, the 11th NHSI tournament, and I have never been, which is crazy. When I was working for Baseball America, when it started, I was working remotely up here in Chicago, and it would always be right when my kids were on spring break. You know, I have four kids. They're grown up now, but they were spread out. So there's always somebody on spring break, and then we were always on vacation usually. And I think the one year I was going to go, I can't remember why, because it's usually we do a lot of, hey, see last year type of planning, and you always go. But I was going to go in 2020. For some reason, you weren't going to be able to go. And then The pandemic happened, and so I still didn't get to go. So I've been to the training complex. I have never been to the NHSI.
It's a great tournament. We'll dig in a little bit. I've been to almost all of them. Every once in a while, the Passover holiday intersects, and that keeps me from coming. That's kept me a couple times from making it here. So I'm excited to be here. We're going to keep also on today's show, we're going to keep the sort of streak alive and talking to college guys who have been doing very impressive things. All right, now, Jim, repeat after me. Caglione. Jack Caglione. We've been practicing.
I'm sure I'll butcher it at least once.
I think you're probably right there. He is going to join us, the Florida Gators two-way player. They probably should just give him the John Olerud Award right now and not worry about the rest of the season. He'll join us to talk about the season he's been having for the Gators, balancing pitching and hitting, trying to win, and being a top-of-the-draft kind of guy. After that, we'll shift gears a little bit and take a look at the start of the minor league season a little more closely, vis-a-vis some of the best minor league rosters out there. That obviously starts with the Norfolk Tides and goes from there. And we'll finish off, as usual, with a question from the listener mailbag. All right, Jim. A little rainy here today for workouts for the NHSI, but I got to see some batting practice and some good things. There have been some incredible players to have come through this tournament over the years. Max Fried, I think Jack Flaherty first jumped on the scene as a sophomore here. I remember seeing that performance. Joey Gallo played here. And the list kind of goes.
Cody Bellinger.
And, Clay Bellinger, Garrett Mitchell.
Anthony Volpe.
Yeah, Anthony Volpe. Touki Toussaint had a huge start here. I was talking with the Orange Lutheran head coach, Eric Borba, who they've been here a number of years. They've won it three times. And they had to face Touki Toussaint in the first round, and it was like 29 degrees. That's the only time I think they've lost in the first round of the tournament. And the way this works is, you know, the entire high school teams, and you got to win four games, and that's how you win. You know, win the tournament, but you lose, you're done. I mean, you get more games in consolation brackets because USA Baseball rightfully didn't want to play one game. You're guaranteed four games against good competition. The complex here is pristine as usual. Two of the fields are completely turfed over now. So many good players to come through here and so many incredible moments. What I love, it's twofold. You know, you get to see some really good draft prospects, both this year and then You know, maybe if you're lucky, make a mental note of some underclassmen like I did at Jack Flaherty years ago. But then invariably, because it's a team tournament and you're playing four games in 4 days, there are guys who come out of nowhere and step up and do something huge, even if they're not pro prospects. And that makes it a really fun tournament. This year, Jim, it's not as robust, I think, in terms of the top level guys. But I am very excited to see Bryce Rayner from Harvard Westlake, who is maybe has as much helium as any high school player in the country.
I think it's fair.
From what I've told, a very good two-way player in his own right, but has taken this huge step forwards as a big physical athletic shortstop and left-handed hitter. His teammate at Harvard Westlake, and that's the same school that you know that Max Fried and Jack Flaherty and Lucas Giolito went to. Giolito was hurt his year that he would have pitched at the here at the NHSI. Duncan Marston is another guy who's got a big up arrow next to his name. But we're also going to see Derek Curiel from Orange Lutheran. He's probably the biggest name from that team. They're a young team with some guys we're going to be talking about in the next couple of years. Burke Mabius is a good catcher from Bishop Gorman in Las Vegas. That's Joey Gallo's alma mater. And Ethan Scheifelbein is a left-handed pitcher who's also in our top 150. So a good amount of talent. Guys make names for themselves. Jordan Adams put himself on the map here with how he played in NHSI and ended up going in the first round. Jim, I know that first of all, most of the teams that are in the tournament this year are from my neck of the draft.
Like 13 of them, right?
Yeah. So, and the teams who are here from your area don't have the top guys, but there are a couple of interesting guys that we probably should keep an eye on.
Yeah, you know, Farragut, Tennessee, traditionally one of the better programs in Tennessee. They've got a couple players. I don't know if they're going to make our top 150 or if they'll make the top 250 when we expand to that by the end of June. They have a right-hander named Cato Leary, 6'4", committed to Mississippi State. He can touch 95. He can flash an interesting slider. Has to show he can hold his stuff and be consistent with it in terms of strikes. They have an outfielder named Landis Davila, who's 6'3", 200. It's a pro body. It's bat speed. He can run a little bit. He's a wide receiver. You know, some questions on the bat. He's committed to Mississippi State as well. And then there isn't a standout. There's no Walker Jenkins in North Carolina this year. There's no first-round high school pick. But the best high school player in North Carolina may be Sawyer Black. He's an outfielder from Wesleyan Christian who's in the tournament. And I think what stands out most about him is he can hit. You know, trying to figure out the rest of his game, you know, it might be kind of average tools, but you like the bat. And so it'll be interesting. I'm not sure how signable, if he goes high enough to sign him away from Liberty, maybe he does. But, you know, he'd be the best guy. He's probably the best guy in North Carolina. So you'll see him on hand there in Cary over the next few days.
Yeah, and of course, one of the best things is just being able to the downside when we used to do broadcasts and was part of the broadcast team, it was always a lot of fun and we called a lot of exciting baseball, but you couldn't run around and watch all the action at the same time. There are four fields here, you know, main stadium where the quarterfinal, semifinal, and final will take place, and we would always broadcast those. But being able to sort of rotate around and network and talk to scouts that are here, because this is obviously a very highly scouted event, I think it's invaluable, because the top guys you'll have seen, you know, in the summer showcase circuit, but showcases are kind of a different animal. And this, you get to see these players in a team setting, which you get to see area guys get to see them when they're home and cross checkers can come in. But this is all on one field at the same time against the best competition, any of them, even, you know, the Southern California schools that are constantly facing good competition. You know, Orange Lutheran has already played Harvard Westlake twice, and now they may meet them in the semifinal if it all goes well here. But just being able to see how they carry themselves in this kind of setting, I think can provide a lot of really good information.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think sometimes you have to be careful. Like the Jordan Adams, you know, is almost like a cautionary tale for me too, sure. Though, where guys were not on him as a first-round pick. And then he's hot for four games, and all of a sudden he's a first-round pick, and that hasn't worked out too well. So, but no, you're right. I mean, you're getting to see guys not just against good competition, But it's also, I mean, outside of, you know, maybe playing for your state title, it's high pressure. This isn't like playing on the showcase circuit where a lot of it is, you know, kind of showcasing what you can do. This is like high level, intense games. And so, I mean, I do think there's a lot of valuable information about it. I'm just always a little wary of the guys, like I said, who weren't highly regarded, who all of a sudden vault up into the first round. Although, and you'll know this better than me, was Ralphie Velasquez NHSI or was he Boris
Yes. Classic? No, yeah. He was NHSI.
And I think he was probably more highly regarded than Jordan Adams, but he helped solidify himself. It seemed like he really made a push. He was on radars and he can really hit, and he wound up being a first round pick of the Guardians. And I think he's going to be a really interesting prospect for them. But yeah, I'm talking about what a cool event it is. And again, I've never been, but I've heard from many people who love the event.
Yes.
You've
heard me talk it up enough. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm always a little, like I said, leery of the guy who kind of comes out of nowhere and everybody's like, oh, this guy might be a first rounder. It's like, well, if he wasn't a first rounder, is a weekend going to turn him into a first rounder? And sometimes it happens.
Yeah. I mean, no, I think it's a sample size thing. You need to be careful. And it's kind of like if you really parse the data, and I'm sure teams do this, sort of like when you find out you look at a college player who is putting up really good numbers, and then it turns out that he's teeing off on Tuesdays and Sundays.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and no high school team is used to playing four games in 4 days against really good competition. And the reason why some of the, you know, it's typically been Southern California schools that win this thing, these big programs that have really deep pitching staffs.
Because you're not bringing guys back in short rest.
You're not even allowed to.
Yeah. So, I mean, you basically, if you're going to win four games, you need to find four pitchers.
Yeah, and you hope your starters can go deep. And invariably, there's some guy who's thrown one inning all year, or somebody you pulled up from the JV team, who ends up pitching in a championship setting and comes through. And so we'll have to sort of see what happens. But you put up numbers on days three and four here, you know, it's not the same thing as doing it, you know, if you win your first two games or, what you know, win your first game and you're facing the best pitchers. And I think the flip side of that also is that if you lose in the first round, sometimes a guy ends up having a really good tournament here and you don't hear about him. Now, scouts are following certain guys, but those are still really good games, but you're focused on who's going to win. But, you know, this field, I talked about Southern California, Huntington Beach won it last year. Orange Lutherans won it three times. The two of them have won five of the last six. Huntington Beach won in 2016. Orange Lutheran won it 17, 18, and 19. And then Huntington Beach won it again last year. But there are a lot of other really, really good teams. Bishop Gorman, Castile. You mentioned Farragut. Castile's in Arizona. St. John's Country Day. They all won state titles last year. So these are good programs in good baseball areas. So it's going to be a lot of fun, you know, even if it's not the same as, you know, the years when, you know, you saw Max Fried and Jack Flaherty on the field at the same time, but no one really knew who Jack Flaherty was that first time. So you just never know who's going to come to the fore. And I agree with you. You need to sort of take it with a little bit of a grain of salt and take it for what it is. And it's a snapshot. It's an important snapshot, but it shouldn't be blown out of proportion. All right, you ready to switch gears and talk a little college?
Sure.
All right, well, we're going to do that when we come back, because joining us on the podcast is Florida Gators two-way star Jack Caglione. Coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jonathan May along with Jim Callis, and we're on a roll here talking to some of the top college players in this year's draft class. And today we are thrilled to have with us Florida's own Jack Caglione. Jack, thank you so much for taking a little time out to chat with us today.
Yeah, thank y'all for having me.
I want to start out with an easier one because both Jim and I, even at the outset of this show, practiced saying your name correctly repeatedly because we want to make sure we didn't butcher it. I want to know, how badly have you heard your name butchered, either by PA announcers, reporters? What's the give us some of the highlights or I guess lowlights.
I mean, there was one time where it was Caglione. Honestly, it was the spelling that usually trips people up, but it's like the go-to when people don't really know it. It's like Caglione. So, you know, it gets taken care of after a little while, especially being here too. So the guys, you know, made sure to know how to pronounce it beforehand. So,
well, we got it right. I think we both are comfortable saying Caglione, and we're not going to butcher it. I was going to ask you, Jack, you know, obviously your two-way exploits get a lot of attention. Is it true that Florida recruited you primarily as a pitcher? Was that the original plan, that you'd be mainly a pitcher, and then you hurt your elbow and needed Tommy John surgery, and so they gave you the opportunity to hit as a freshman? How'd the whole recruiting process unfold?
Yeah. Originally, back when Craig Bell was here, that's the guy that I talked to. He said that they're going to give me the opportunity to do both. And obviously, kind of as high school went on and the pitching upside kind of, I guess, receded the hitting side of things, that was kind of the way that it was looking. And then obviously going down with injury and kind of rebuilding back was when Sully kind of was like, you know what, maybe there's something here. Let's give it a shot. And yeah, I'm just really thankful that he did.
It's interesting now because if you talk to scouts, and we'll unpack kind of both sides of the ball for you, but at least entering into the year, and maybe it was because, you know, last year was your first year pitching post surgery. If you were to sort of poll scouts, I think most people preferred you as a hitter. I think that might still be the case. Were you even surprised how much your hitting advanced? And then even this year, it seems to have taken another step forward in terms of your approach.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, all I really wanted to do was do both for as long as I could. I always knew it was there. I always, you know, considered myself a hitter who could pitch. But once the velo and everything started ticking up, I became more of a pitcher who could hit. But to me, you know, my expectations for myself are really high coming to college and doing both. Not sure anybody could foresee what happened like last year and what's going on this year and stuff like that. But I definitely felt like I had what it took to, you know, be a productive hitter for my team.
And our listeners, I think, are familiar, but just in case they aren't, Jack led the nation in home runs last year with 33. He also went 7-4 on the mound with well over a strikeout per inning, got his fastball up to the upper 90s. Florida went to the College World Series finals. I'm sure you want Jack to pursue playing both ways at the next level. Have you thought about that? Has that come up in conversations with scouts? I mean, if a team, you're obviously going to go very high in the draft. And if a team came to you and said, hey, we want you to be a full-time hitter, are you okay with that? Or would it be more of a discussion like, hey, I'd like to try to do both? And how thankful are you for Shohei Ohtani for even showing that it can be done and maybe giving the opportunity to other players to try to do the same?
Yeah, I mean, Shohei's definitely the guy that, you know, I've looked to ever since he's busted on the scene. Just kind of his work ethic and how he goes about things has been really helpful for me navigating through the college season, which, you know, it was half the games, but still, you know, it could take a lot on the body. But I think that, like, one of those talks are going to be something that I'd like to have if they want to make me one or the other. Because my plan, you know, I'd love to do it at, you know, the professional level. But if a team, you know, is very adamant about me just doing one or the other, then I gotta make it work somehow, right?
Absolutely. I think that's the right attitude to have. I wanted to ask, because we've talked about this a lot, Shohei Ohtani has provided this great model for you. He's also kind of a freak, you know, and being compared to him, I would imagine it was humbling. And we've sort of talked about calling anybody the college Shohei Ohtani is unfair to Shohei Ohtani and probably unfair to you. How do you handle when people sort of bring that up to you and want to try to make that kind of unfair comparison?
I really don't know how to react half the time. I mean, any comparison to a guy like that, you know, like you said, it's really humbling. You know, it's really cool to kind of be, I guess, the college version of that. It's something I take a lot of pride in, and hopefully, you know, kind of just influence the younger generation of players, you know, that it's not impossible. You know, you don't got to just end up relying on one to go to college or so forth. But yeah, I think it's really cool.
Jack, you mentioned a second ago, you're talking about the toll it can take on the body. And I think, you know, fans see what happens on the field, you know, hitting home runs, striking guys out. You know, Shohei makes it look pretty easy. You've made it look pretty easy at the college level. But can you tell us, so fans can understand, how much preparation goes into being able to do both? Because there's a lot of work when you're a starting pitcher, obviously, that goes in on the days you're not pitching, except on a lot of those days you're in the lineup hitting. Like, how involved is your routine throughout the week, and how difficult is it?
The coaching staff here with Coach Kopp, our pitching guy, and, you know, Chuck Drollman, they really, after using last year, it's kind of like the test run. This year it's been a lot smoother when it comes to going over the scouting reports for the teams for the weekend, as well as the pitchers. For me, I just see it as more of like an advantage. You know, I know what the mind of a hitter's like, and I know what the mind of a pitcher's like. So I've also found ways to kind of incorporate that into my play. But it's definitely not easy. You know, it's nice throwing on Sundays too, because then you get to watch 18 innings of how these guys react and what they like. So
I don't want to ask you about that, Jack, because I think a lot of times when teams try to, you know, get a player like yourself to focus on one or the other, is that the fear is one that's not as advanced holds them back. You know, the fear might be like, if you're a hitter only, you might be in the big leagues in a hurry. I mean, so your teammate Wyatt Langford has done, that's setting the bar kind of high, but, you know, and that if you have to continue to work on the pitching, that may keep you from getting that bat to the big leagues, or vice versa, depending on the player. The thing that has impressed me so much with you this year is that you've taken big steps forward on both sides. Was this something like in the fall, or maybe it was at the start of the spring, that you felt like you were ready to make these steps forward? Because it feels like offensively, you've cut down your chase, the swing and miss is down, and then on the mound, you're filling up the strike zone a lot more. Maybe, I mean, you can speak to that, but maybe that was, you know, more just another year removed from surgery. Just sort of take us through how you've managed to make these jumps forward in both directions.
Yeah. Honestly, just kind of knowing that all the negatives that kind of happened last year, you know, learning from them and not kind of just sweeping them under the rug and really kind of materializing them for what they were and taking away the positives, the negatives, and everything in between, and applying that to the offseason work. I mean, I was really lucky to get the opportunity to work with Cliff Lee in the offseason for a few weeks, and we had just kind of talked about basically everything in his mind about the pitching side of things, and that was really helpful. And I felt like I left working with him, you know, like a completely different pitcher. And coming back in the fall and having Coach Kopp and kind of breaking down what I took from the off season with him was, you know, it ended up working in a way where we came up with a plan and kind of stuck with it and wrote it out all fall and, you know, just prepped for where we are now.
And Jack, you've made impressive strides as a hitter too. I mean, obviously big year last year, 33 home runs, leads the nation. But talking to scouts, I guess the biggest concern they had was your chase rates were somewhat high. Your strikeout rates were close to 20%. This year, your strikeout rate's under 10%. You're not chasing as much. And I know it's something people always talk about, you know, having a more disciplined approach, but it's not like you can just, you know, flick a switch. Okay, this year I'm cutting my strikeout rate in half. How have you refined your approach? I mean, because it's been striking that you've cut your strikeout rate in more than half while still being as productive as ever. I think, was it 9 homers in your last 12 games?
Yeah. So me and Coach Rallman, you know, in the fall, really focused on kind of sticking with one certain part of the zone. And, you know, if a pitch is not in that window, you're not going to swing at it type deal. And that's kind of eliminated the bottom half and all those kind of sweepers that I'd chased the past year. And really just kind of keep my sights up. Just seeing the ball up has been the biggest help for me.
I guess, Jack, you know, whenever I've had a chance to talk to a guy who does both things at such a high level, I'm curious, how would Jack Caglione, the pitcher, get out Jack Caglione, the hitter?
Probably a lot of left-on-left changes just because you don't really see those a whole lot.
Would Jack Hagley known the pitcher? Jack, I butchered your name there. After I probably say it. That's
terrible. See? Yeah, I know, put some money in the jar now.
Would Jack Hagley own the pitcher be able to get Jack Hagley own the hitter out? That's the question I have.
Yeah. Yeah. Who wins that battle?
Nah, I got to go with my hitting side on that one.
I can't wait someday on like MLB The Show to actually try this out, at least in a virtual reality.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet.
We'll work on that. You know, Jack, you know, Florida has had such a long history of success, not only in College World Series, as Jim was talking about, but, you know, high draftees. And I mentioned Wyatt Langford and what he's been able to do. How much fun is it to see a guy that you were just playing with a year ago in the big leagues now? You know, that's like an impossible bar to follow, but yeah.
I took the time our last off day last week. I drove down to Tampa to saw him and saw him play against the Rays. You know, seeing him come up behind Corey Seager, I was like, dude, this is honestly unreal. You know, I was following behind him last year, and now he's following up a World Series MVP. It's just kind of crazy how fast life moves. And, you know, a guy like Wyatt, it's impossible to root against him. He's just done everything right from the beginning. So I'm just extremely proud to say that I played with him.
When you faced him in inter squads, how did you try to pitch him? Is there an easy, I know there's not an easy way to get him out, but how did you try to pitch him and how did you fare against him?
I may have gotten him one time. Other than that, it's like with him, you know that something's going to get put in play. So you're just praying that it's not 110 off the bat. A lot of heaters, surprisingly. I threw a little cutters in there, but I don't know. I wanted to challenge myself, wanted to challenge him too.
Yeah, I feel like you need another shot at him because you're a different pitcher now than you were last time you faced him. So, you know, just to be fair to yourself, you know, that was your, you know, when you faced him in intra-squad, you were just coming back. So, you know, just remember that. Don't be too hard on yourself, Jack. Jack, the last thing I wanted to ask you is we talked about, you know, the Gators are so much attention on succeeding and going to the College World Series. At the same time, it's been a, you know, a factory of professional players. So everyone kind of knows, I'm sure, how to go about it, but how do you handle that balance of not trying to do too much, knowing that especially the teams at the top of the draft are really watching you very carefully? How do you try to stay within yourself and not let that added spotlight get to you?
Honestly, it's just kind of comes down to just being wrapped up in the team. You know, one thing that we talk about and one of like the biggest things for, I guess, Florida baseball culture is the quicker you kind of wrap yourself up and just focusing on winning and, you know, being there for the other eight guys on the field, the quicker all the personal stuff will kind of come. I'm not counting down the days until July. I'm not doing anything like that. I'm just focused on tonight, going to play Florida State and just really taking everything one day at a time, enjoying this with my teammates and just trying to ride it out for as long as possible.
Jack, I always like to ask guys about the competition, to scout the competition a little bit. And I'll ask you a two-part question because you're a two-way player. You know, you're in the SEC. You went to the College World Series. You played for USA Baseball. Who is the best hitter and who is the best pitcher you have faced?
Dang, man. Best hitter? I mean, it's kind of hard not to go with the obvious, like Brady Montgomery or Condon or Lavalette for sure. Pitcher? I'm kind of blanking on it, to be honest with you. There hasn't really been one where I've been kind of domed up about.
To say I was wondering if you're going to go Paul Skeens after facing him last year.
No, we never did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know you didn't get him during the regular season? You guys didn't play during the regular season then?
We did not. Not in the tournament either. So.
Yeah, okay.
But Ty Floyd wasn't terrible. He had a really good fastball, that's for sure.
All right, Jack, we know you got Florida State tonight. We're going to let you go. Thank you so much for taking some time to chat with Jim and I. Good luck the rest of the way, and we'll see you come draft time in July and beyond. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we're back, we'll have more of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Jonathan Mayo, coming to you from Cary, North Carolina, home of USA Baseball, along with Jim Callis at Shea Callis, home of Jim Callis et al. And dogs and everything. We're going to switch gears now after talking draft to the top of the show. We're now fully into the minor league season with all the full season levels underway, which is exciting. I think we're going to let some more data pile up before we really dig in. But one of the things that we're working on this week is kind of looking at the top lineups, the top rosters across minor league baseball in 2024 so far. I mean, it's not just performance, although it's nice when, Jim, the team on paper that looks like it's got the most stacked roster is also doing just absolutely ridiculous things from a statistical standpoint. And that, of course, is the Norfolk Tides. Sam Dykstra is going to have a look at the top 10 rosters in all minor league baseball coming up soon. But what Norfolk is doing is kind of absurd. We knew they were going to be good.
Yeah, you don't think they're going to hit 343 as a team and average 11 runs a game all year?
I think they might. The crazy thing is that, like, I think they scored two runs on Sunday or one of the games over the weekend. So that's quote unquote slowed them down. They have, I mean, let's just so people understand who the top prospects are. You know, Jackson Holliday, obviously, Kobe Mayo, Heston Kerstad, those are the top 100 guys. Connor Norby is off to a ridiculous start. But it also has, like, you know, like Kyle Stowers isn't a prospect anymore. I think if he were someplace else, he'd probably be in the big leagues. But Kerstad's got six homers and 25 runs batted in 9 games. Kyle Stowers has six homers and 18 runs batted in. Connor Norby has got four homers at 1,200 OPS. I mean, it's just kind of absolutely crazy what they're doing. You know, they've got some pitchers who are in their top 30, but it's really this offense that has been, I don't know that I remember seeing, Jim, a team, I mean, live up to, surpass ridiculously high expectations, however you want to frame what they're doing so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, they've broken out of the gates very, very hot. I mean, you know, I think Kerstad, I was working on my pipeline newsletter yesterday. I think Kerstad leads the minors in slugging, ops, homers, RBIs, hits, total bases, and extra base hits.
That's it?
Yeah, that's all. My favorite stat about the team is that Jackson Holliday is hitting 342 with a 1096 ops, and that's bringing the team averages down. Like, the team is hitting 343 with an 1105 ops. So, like, Jackson Holliday deserves no credit for any of that. he's bringing them, he's dragging down, he's an anchor. You kind of alluded to, like, the lineup is their top prospects, but when we were bouncing around camps, you know, we do these spring reports, and you come up with a theme. And my theme, so I wasn't just writing about Jackson Holliday for the 8,000th time, was that the Orioles actually have some pitching prospects who are, you know, maybe close to helping him in the big leagues to get overshadowed. And I will point out, you know, Chase McDermott is off to a good start. He's walking a few too many guys. Kay Povich has given up one earned run in two starts. Those might be their two best pitching prospects, and they're both off to good starts too. So, you know, we talk about how the Orioles have been the number one farm system, I think, in our last five, whatever. Like, yeah, our biannual rankings. It's been for at least more than 2 years. They've kept this going, and that's with graduating Rutschman and Henderson and Rodriguez and others to the big leagues. They still have a loaded system. Now, I will go out on a limb and say I don't think we're going to have the Orioles as our number one farm system going into 2025, because I think they'll have graduated too many of these guys. But the concentration of talent they have in AAA with, you know, these guys could be here for a little while, because there's not a lot of openings in their lineup. Yeah, you know, I keep pounding the table, they should promote Jackson Holliday yesterday. But even if you do that, there's not really room. Like Kerstad's off to a great start, but Colton Cowser's in Baltimore and he's not getting regular at bats. And like, I don't know where Kobe Mayo is going to fit. You know, I mean, I'm not saying all these guys have to be promoted based on 9 games. You know, you mentioned, you know, Stowers is, you know, would be in some lineups in the big leagues, but not Baltimore's. You know, same with Norby. It's going to be interesting. These guys could be here for a while and wreak a lot of havoc because they don't have a lot of openings in Baltimore.
You can't play 9 outfielders and 7 infielders. You know, Connor Norby's. It's funny because he almost is the forgotten guy because I think he went from really being thought of as maybe an elite level player, and then he's like, well, now it looks like maybe he's just like a really solid player. He's 23, you know, so it's not like he's 30 years old and putting up, you know, strong numbers in AAA. He's young for the level. Kyle Stowers is only 26. Yeah, at a certain point in time, I think maybe they're going to have to trade some of these guys to get them an opportunity and maybe get something in return for them. But you're right in that Norfolk has a chance to put up really good numbers for a long period of time because of all these guys. I mean, Holiday is the guy that they're going to figure out room for when they decide they're ready to bring him up. I think Kobe Mayo they will find room for, but he's so young that I don't think you have to worry about that. He's 22 and he's just there, you know, getting there now. You know, if he spends a year in AAA, so be it. You know, he's still really, really young.
Right. I kind of feel the same.
But like Kerstad, you know, he was up last year. I don't know that they make room for him, you know, but a guy like Norby and a guy like a sort of just removed from being a prospect like Stowers might need, you know, that sort of free the prospect kind of billing to get them to go someplace else and see what they can do every day in the big leagues. Norfolk is obviously not the only team that's stacked. There's a lot of really good talent all around minor league baseball. People know by now that the three of us, you, me, and Sam Dykstra, split up all 30 teams. Jim, who are a couple of your organization's rosters that really stand out for you? And really, this is only on paper because the non-AAA teams just got started over the past weekend.
Yeah, they've all played 3 games. There were 2 AA teams that jumped out to me, Jonathan. One would be the Cubs, Tennessee Smokies affiliate, which is the only franchise, I believe, that has 4 top 100 prospects on their roster. They've got right-hander Cade Horton, infielder Matt Shaw, outfielder Kevin Alcantara, infielder James Triantos, who we saw tear up the Arizona Fall League. We saw Alcantara there as well. Shaw and Horton are their last 2 first-round picks. And, you know, beyond that, I mean, that's just a really deep lineup. I think we're going to see Cade Horton in Chicago at some point this year. I think we're going to see Matt Shaw in Chicago at some point this year. Maybe not Alcantara and Triantos, but you know, catcher Moises Ballesteros is a really good bat-to-ball guy who we've discussed as a potential top 100 prospect. Michael Arias is a reliever who could be in Chicago at some point this year. Hayden McGeary is on our top 10 first base prospects list. I think all told, there are 12 of our Cubs' top 30 prospects on the Tennessee Smokies. And then another loaded AA team, one of the organizations I do, is the Portland Sea Dogs with the Red Sox. They've got the Red Sox top 3 prospects, all of whom rank in the top 40 on the top 100. That's shortstop Marcel Meyer, outfielder Roman Anthony, catcher Kyle Teal. I think all those guys have upward mobility. They're the big names, but you also have guys like Wickelman Gonzalez, right-hander who led the minors in strikeout rate last year. Really, really good stuff. Nick York, former first-round pick, former top 100 prospect. They don't have 12 top 30 prospects, but that's a pretty formidable group at the top of their – I think right now it's 5 of their top 7 prospects in the organization are at Portland.
No, that's a good list. I'm going to shine a light on one team in particular. I want to give a quick shout to the A's AA team in Midland because they have 12 of their top 30 prospects, starting with Jacob Wilson, their number 1 pick from last year and their top prospect. So that's, you know, a strong collection. But I'm looking at the Hartford Yard Goats, and it's not just because I want to say Yard Goats, one of my favorite nicknames in all minor league baseball, but the Rockies AA affiliate has some serious talent, including starting with their number 1 prospect, Adale Amador. You want to talk about bat-to-ball skills. You know, they've only been able to play 1 game so far. Playing in the Eastern League in April can be rough, but he's only 20. He's shown a ridiculous approach already at such a young age. He's going to play up the middle. You know, whether he sticks it short, we'll have to see. Maybe it's second base, but that doesn't really matter. He's going to hit. The thing that I like about this group, Jim, is like it's also really, really young. You know, Yunkel Fernandez is there. He's only 21. He's got probably, you know, as much raw power as anyone in the organization, probably one of the top raw power guys in all of minor league baseball, put on a show in the Futures game last year in terms of in BP. It's just a question of whether or not his approach will work at Double-A. He touched there last year. Actually played 56 games, so hopefully he can take what he learned there. Sterling Thompson is one of my kind of favorite pure hitters in the minors, and I actually thought he had a chance to go straight to Triple-A. His organization mate and buddy Jordan Beck is in Triple-A, so I don't know how long Sterling Thompson's going to be with Hartford, but he's there for now. And then you have guys like Zach Veen, who is looking to bounce back after injury. You've got Benny Montgomery. These guys are all 22 or younger in Double-A. And then, kind of goes on and on in terms of other guys are there. Carson Palmquist started the one game and threw really well. Jaden Hill, who's now a reliever only. We saw the stuff play in the fall league, and he had a really good big league camp to the point when I was in camp, their farm director, Chris Forbes, wasn't sure he was going to see him again. He thought maybe he was going to make the big league team, but, command is the issue. But so there's some interesting things happening in Hartford, mostly on the offensive side. And as you sort of pointed out in talking about the Cubs guys in particular, it's not hard to imagine guys, if things start to really click in Double-A and they move on up, that they could help a big league team, especially a team like Colorado, which's got to rely on their young and homegrown guys. So it'll be fun to watch to see how these teams kind of continue to perform and see if any of them kind of historically stand out by the end of the year. Now, that's hard because of promotions and things like that. But another thing we're doing, Jim, is kind of looking at where Norfolk in particular, because they're, I think, head and shoulders above everybody. And that Tennessee team isn't that far behind. But trying to figure out where they stand when looking back over, over the years at some of the best minor league teams. We only have a small handful of data right now, so we can't compare statistically or wins and things like that. But on paper, I think there are a couple of teams that really kind of jumped to the fore over the years as really stacked rosters who did impressive things in the minors and had a lot of guys who then went on to be in the big leagues. And Jim, since you've been doing this longer than I have, I'm going to let you go as far back as you want in your lexicon of knowledge to pick out a team that kind of jumped to your mind when we were sort of thinking about which teams historically fit in this conversation.
I go back, I'm going to go way back in the way back machine to the 1995 Columbus Clippers, who were then a Yankees affiliate. And as you know, I don't know if this is true of everybody when they get old, but I can remember things from 30 years ago better than I can remember things from last week. And as you just listened to our Jack Caglione interview, I forgot how to pronounce his name in the middle of the interview. So I have no short-term memory, but I will go back 30 years to the Columbus Clippers, where they had two Hall of Famers in Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera. They had two guys who may get into the Hall of Fame one day, and Andy Pettit and Jorge Posada. They had Ruben Rivera, who was considered a better prospect than all of them at the time. Like there was talk that Ruben Rivera might be the next Mickey Mantle. That part didn't work out too well. They also had guys like Russ Davis, Ramiro Mendoza, Brian Boringer. So I don't know why the 95 Columbus Clippers pop in my mind, but that is the team. I think I just having the two Hall of Famers, jumps out. Like, and I'm sure, I know the Tigers at one point probably had, and before I covered this, that's how long ago it was, like Jack Morris, Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker, and a lot of those guys who wound up being on the World Series championship team all kind of joined the system at the same time. So they were probably on a team together. That was before my time. During my time, I have to go with the 95 Columbus Clippers. What were you doing in 1995, John? I was in my sixth year of Baseball America. What were you doing in 1995?
That was my first year working for the New York Post. I graduated college in 1993. And the irony is, you know, I'm about to hit 25 years at MLB.com, which is crazy to me because that was a stretch where I had like seven jobs in my first few years out of college, bounced around doing a lot of different things. So, but
you were the Drew Thorpe of journalism.
Yes.
Going from one organization to
that's
another.
Right. No, that's so highly, highly thought of, but always expendable. Yes. I'm going to put that on my tombstone. The team that I think I want, I mean, anytime I get the chance to talk about the 2005 Jacksonville Suns, I jump at the chance. And I got to go and cover the Southern League. They were a double-A team then, and now they're the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp as a triple-A team. They were the double-A affiliate of the Dodgers, and they had an absolute ridiculous collection of future big leaguers on this team. And kind of I was laughing when you were talking about Ruben Rivera because the best prospect at the time on that team was Joel Guzman.
Yep.
Or the tall shortstop. And he played in the big leagues, but never sort of reached the expectations or, you know, or the ceiling that people thought he had. But also on that team, their first baseman was James Loney. Their catcher was Russell Martin. Russell Martin hadn't even been catching for that long. They also had, I'm just talking about off, you know, hitters who made it to the big leagues, Tony Abreu. Andy LaRoche was on that team. You know, Delwin Young was on that team. It kind of lists goes on and on. Justin Ruggiano. So from like guys who are stars to on down. And then the pitching, Chad Billingsley, Jonathan Broxton, Joel Hanrahan. I mean, Hanrahan was still a starter. Broxton was kind of a swing guy. Hung Chi Kuo was on that team. Eric Stoltz was on that team.
Edwin Jackson. Don't forget Edwin Jackson.
I will not forget Edwin Jackson. Greg Miller pitched on the team. He, you know, we've talked about him before on the podcast. Yep. Was one of the best pitching prospects in all of baseball. Justin Orenduff, who was, you know, a really good pitcher, but had injuries and now is still involved in the game, sort of working on evaluating deliveries for injuries because of that. So, it even the veterans on that team, like guys who never made it. Todd Donovan stole 62 bases. He was like the old guy. John Weber was on that team, and he was a guy who hit like wherever he hit 300 that year. So it was like just everywhere he went. That team was so good, Jim, that Matt Kemp won the Triple Crown in the Florida State League the year before. And you're usually a guy like that gets bumped up for the playoff run. They didn't promote him because there was no place for him to go. That team was just too stacked. So that's the team that jumps out. I'm going to be working on that story, so look for that later in the week. And we'll also have the most stacked roster for every organization coming this week as we kind of dig in to stuff at the minor league level. All right, let's hit the mailbag and wrap this thing up. And we're going to hear from our friend Blah Blah. We need to have some sort of like mailbag frequent contributor contest or have them both on, but we need Blah Blah and we need Stevie D. Maybe they could just host the podcast one week, give us a week off.
I feel like Blah Blah almost has an unfair advantage right now over Stevie D, where Blah Blah will submit and they're good questions, but Blah Blah will submit 15 questions at once, which great, like where Stevie D always submits a good question, but he submits every time we ask for questions. Stevie D will submit a question, but Blah Blah is like stuffing the ballot box.
It does make me wonder if either of them just have like a document full of questions that they're ready. I mean, they're updated and they're relevant, so probably not. They're constantly updating them. But yeah, Blah Blah, like I'm still not 100% sure this is a real human being.
Because it's all the number, like, what is it? Blah, blah.
Blah, blah, 9234-2524. I almost want to, it's almost a phone number. But, you know, just because of so many questions, it's like, it's just really advanced pipeline mailbag AI.
like that's an application that was needed. Like there, there are a lot of developers working on MLB pipeline. So. Hey, if they could come up with a way to write top 30, like I could just feed them information and they'll write up our top 30 prospects and our draft reports. That would be fine.
That would come in handy now that we're, especially as we're digging into our top 150.
I was also say blah, blah also is following three people and has one follower. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah,
do you know who the three people, without looking, can you guess the three people blah, blah is following? You've heard them all.
I'm going to get, well, I'm assuming he follows MLB Pipeline.
No, incorrect.
Really? So he follows you?
No.
No? He follows me?
No.
He doesn't follow, I have no idea.
Elon Musk.
Oh, no. Okay.
Well, no, that's fine. And then yeah, sure. Florida Gators baseball and Wake Forest baseball.
Okay. Interesting. He does, and he does vary, and we've got a draft question. And the question is there anyone in the draft this year that could land on an opening day roster in 2025 like Wyatt Langford did this year? I'd like to point out also that Nolan Schanuel's on a major league roster. It's fair. And he made it to the big leagues sooner.
So well, that sets up your standard joke that whoever the Angels draft,
the answer is yes. Yeah, right. I think the answer could be yes. There are some advanced hitters. It's awfully hard to do what Wyatt Langford did and you know what Nolan Schanuel did as well, even for the Angels. Is there anybody that jumps out to you? You know, some of these guys are really, really advanced. I mean, we've got college hitters at the very top of the draft. I guess Travis Bazan and Charlie Condon are the guys at the top that sort of come to mind.
Yeah, I think you're going the right place with this, Jonathan. Like, is it possible? Yes, it's very rare. Like, it almost never happens. I mean, I know the Angels promote guys quickly, but Zach Neto came up 2 weeks into his first full pro season. Like, it really does not happen very often. And so I think with Condon, because he has less defensive responsibilities, although he kind of has bounced around, so they may want him to settle in at a position. Like, could Charlie Condon attempt it? Yes. Could Travis Bazana attempt it? Yes. Like, J.J. Weatherholtz missed so much time. He's still not back. He's back, but not playing shortstop. So, like, if you're trying to develop him as a shortstop, you want him to have time.
Yeah.
I would have thought you could argue Nick Kurtz coming into the year. He got off to a slow start, but he's got 8 homers his last 5 games. But, again, it's very, very difficult to do. So, I guess in terms of the way the question is phrased – could land? Yes. Those guys could land. Like I don't think Jack Caglione, who I got his name right again, I don't think Jack Caglione, if he's trying to play both ways, and I also don't think he's so polished as a hitter that they would just send him to the big leagues. You know, I think Tommy White is a fairly underrated hitter with a ton of power, but I don't think you're going to rush him to the big leagues. So I think the operative word is could, yes. I think Condon and Bazana are probably the two, you know, maybe Nick Kurtz, if he keeps this up, would be the three guys who would jump to mind. I mean, I would have said Weatherholt if he hadn't missed so much of this year with injury, but like I would bet against it happening.
And you look at last year's draft class, which was so ridiculous, and what Wyatt Langford, I mean, it's boggles my mind, not only that he did it, but did it for a team that just won the World Series. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I would understand it more, would maybe be easier to calibrate in my brain if he had done it for a team that was on the way up, you know, or if
Rhett Lauder had made the Reds, who need pitching.
Right, like, right. So
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. It's crazy. It just speaks to Langford. But even Dylan Cruz was the number 2 pick in the draft, really advanced. He's starting the year in Double-A. So I think, you know, looking at this year's draft class, which is not as strong as last year's class, but there are some very talented college hitters at the top. Any of these guys that we've talked about, you could see starting their first full season in Double-A without blinking. And then they could be up in the big leagues, you know, by at some point in their first full season. But I don't think you could expect, I don't think you should ever expect anybody to do what Wyatt Langford is doing.
No, you mentioned Cruz. I mean, also look at Paul Skeens, you know, once again, you know, maybe the best draft pitching prospect of all time, or right there with Steven Strasburg. And he's in AAA. He's not in the, like, it's just hard. Like, you, this isn't going to happen too often. Could, yes. Will, probably not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right. It's going to be a wrap for this week's MLB Pipeline podcast. Our thanks again to Jack Caglione, our special guest from Florida. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show and our pronunciations or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.